The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, show number 622 for Sunday, September 11th, 2016.
Folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in tips, questions, and cool stuff found, and we share your tips and cool stuff found. We also share your questions, and we even attempt to answer them. Sponsors for today's episode include Eero at Eero.com, where coupon code MGG gets you free overnight shipping of enterprise-grade Wi-Fi that is totally built for your home. We'll talk more about that and all kinds of stuff a little bit later in the episode here. In about to be very, very thunderstormy Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun. And
here back in Durham, also about to get slammed by a thunderstorm, Pilot Pete, thanks for having me get back, guys.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you back. When you texted me this morning and asked if we had a mic for you, I was pleased as punch.
Yeah, you weren't trying to hide the show by moving it up an hour. I know.
Yeah, Pete, sure. Show up later.
See you at 10.
That's right.
Yeah. Let everybody go.
Be quiet when you come in. Yeah, no, it's good to have you back, man. Yeah. All right. So all kinds of stuff to talk about this week, but we're going to start with cool stuff found. And John, the first cool stuff found that I want to talk about is something that I found online called Genius Pack. Actually, I think it was a Twitter ad, believe it or not, that taught me about this. But it's ironic that you're here, Pete, because a lot of times we talk about carry-on suitcases, and that's what Genius Pack is. It's a spinner carry-on suitcase that is built for anyone, because now we're all geeks. It's got an internal portable charger that can charge your phone a couple of times. It's got an interesting laundry pouch on the side. Yeah. It uses an air valve to compress your laundry down.
Oh, that's cool. Yep. 'Cause I use vacuum packs to compress
to do the same
down.
Thing.
So, yeah,
sure.
So that's great having that built in.
Yep. So, not inexpensive. It's $238. I saw it online, it looks like there's another code for like another $30 off. So, somewhere in the $200 range, but. I have an old casemate for a short period of time made a carry-on suitcase that I really, really liked and have continued to use for a long time, but I've been in the market. So, yeah.
Well, let me send this out to everybody who makes such cases. As a professional traveler, I'll tell you, it's lots of pockets is key. You know, it really is. I've tried to move away to some other suitcases over the years, and I keep going back to my Pretty Neat Things bag because it, in the middle of the night, I can go and get an antacid because I know exactly what pocket it's in. And I can find my headphones. I can find all this stuff. And it sounds like this suitcase has that. Stuff,
it's got tons of pockets. Yeah. Yes.
Because I just know where my pockets are.
You know where your things are.
I can do it in the dark. Yeah.
Yep. And it doesn't matter what hotel room or Airbnb.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. And having to open the whole suitcase and go through everything in the main part to get to, you know, my shaving kit or something like that,
right,
is just inconvenient. Lots of pockets makes it super easy. So
cool.
This looks cool.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that's number one on the old cool stuff found list. Number two on the cool stuff found list comes from listener Larry. This here's an item that I've been using for years. It's a Safari extension called Auto Pagerize, and it enables you to continuously scroll through websites that are paginated. It's a Safari extension. But here's the thing. It's not for just any website that's paginated. And their description from actually Macworld UK wrote about it. It says, when you're running a search on Google or shopping on eBay or Amazon, you get your search results served up one page at a time. And you have to keep clicking next to see each successive page. Auto Pagerize speeds that up for you. As you scroll to the bottom of the search results, it auto loads the next page in line at the bottom and gives you continuous scrolling. And I tried it on TMO at first because the description was websites that are paginated. And we have some articles that we do that have multiple pages because they get too long for a single page. And this didn't do anything for those. And then I loaded some Amazon results and it was like, oh, thank goodness. Cause it's a pain in the neck to keep clicking through. So thanks, Larry. Auto pagerize. Pretty cool, huh, John?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So cool. All right. What's next here? What do we got here? Listener John. And this is actually timely because iOS 10 is coming. Listener John says, I'm on the beta of iOS and use Mail app for work and Outlook app for my personal account. Neither offers an option to save an email as a PDF via the share sheet, but, and you may know this already, open an email and choose to print it. At that point, you can force touch the email itself and you get a share sheet arrow where you can then choose to save to Dropbox or iCloud as a perfect PDF. Works in both Mail app and Outlook and really would work anywhere that you can print. And I believe I was able to do this on my iPhone SE just by holding without force touch because I don't have force touch on my iPhone SE. So pretty good, huh, John?
Nice.
Good. Okay, what else do we have here? Lots of cool stuff found. Fast-paced. Clever Files makes a piece of software called Disk Drill. And Disk Drill is yet more data recovery software for the Mac. And I didn't mention it during our backup segment, or at least during our backup deep dive when we did the segment on recovering your data. But it'll scan and show you files and does what it does. It drills into your disk. So have you tried this one out, John?
I've looked at parts of it. Well, number one, I'm like, who are these guys? And I'd ask you that question.
Hmm.
I think this is their first product.
It could be.
Yeah, Clever Files and Disk Drill are registered trademarks of 508 Software LLC. Okay, that's not a name I'm familiar with.
So sure.
Just saying, it's new.
Yep.
But in addition to both data recovery, which, yeah, they claim to be able to recover things from both computers and handheld devices using cleverness, they also have some, smart, what do I see here? Yeah, a whole bunch of stuff here. Backup, protection, recovery, disk health, cleanup, duplicate. So looks like kind of a Swiss Army knife. Though I think their main feature that they're touting is recovery, but they do some other things as well. Why not?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Yeah, the more the merrier, right? As long as it's Mary.
A girl named Mary called. Yeah, you don't know that reference.
I don't know that reference. No, where okay, now you gotta tell me where the reference is from.
It's from Eraserhead. Eraserhead?
You know, that is something I am completely unfamiliar with, which yeah, I know
I think
is...
David Lynch.
Yeah, yes.
It's kind of twisted.
I know, which is why it's bizarre that I've never watched it. So maybe next time we're together, we'll watch Eraserhead.
Yeah, we could find it. So I'll toss one out here.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Because it's something I just got, Dave, and I think it's pretty slick. So Synology wanted to set me up with something new. Okay. So, as you know, I got the DS713 Plus. It's one of their more modest units. Has two bays, but it's got the oomph. I think it has enough juice to do the transcoding and stuff like
right.
that if need be.
Right.
But one reason I got that one is because when they hooked me up with it, they're like, oh, by the way, this is one of the units that has the potential for expansion. So they sent me, and they set me up with, and I am using it right now, and I'm actually scrubbing as we speak. But they have some expansion units, and I'm like, well, I'll check one of those out. And it's the DX213. So what does that do for you? So it's basically, it looks pretty much like the other unit, but it has two bays and an eSATA cable that basically you connect it to your original unit. I think they also have a 5-bay unit, which is, I guess it's the 513.
But makes
it basically
sense.
Turns sure. It basically turns my 2-bay unit, Dave, into a 4-bay unit.
So in as far as the software is concerned, your 2-bay unit you don't directly address this expansion. It just now when you talk to your main Synology 713, it sees four drives and you have all those extra capabilities and that, correct?
Right. So what it
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. The only thing is, you know, when you list your drives, it'll say, oh, the location of this is DX213 dash.
Sure. Okay.
So you can tell that it's in there.
Right.
But I did a few things. So one, you know, one, I learned how their hybrid RAID works. So right now I have 2 3s in the original unit.
Okay.
And I'm like, and the rule is using their Synology hybrid RAID, if you add a drive, it has to be at least the size of the existing drives or larger.
The size of your largest drive or larger. That's correct. Yeah.
Now, I thought I could combine two smaller drives to look like a larger drive, but that's not the way it works. And you told me that was silliness. But I was like, oh, there is a way to do it, actually. You can take two drives and meld them into one, but it's not. It's a separate volume.
It's a separate volume. That's true. Yeah, but when I totally this, possible. That's right. Yeah.
But here's what I did. So I put in an extra drive, and it adds it to the array, and it takes it a while to, you know, configure it and format it and stuff like that. And now all of a sudden I have that same option that you have, data scrubbing, which is a feature that verifies the integrity of the drives and the the checksum data, I guess, right?
Right. Right. It reads everything and makes sure that it can read it. That's at its core, that's what data scrubbing does. That's right.
But then the other thing I did, Dave, is like, well, you know, I got an extra bay. Should I put another drive? Well, I can't because it has to be at least the same size. So right now I have 2 3s and a 4.
Okay.
So actually, the 4, I actually purchased a factory refurbished WD. I got it for $99, dude.
Cool.
We'll see how it works. And then the other thing that I did, which is really cool, so I have one extra bay. I'm like, what should I do with this? Well, I took my SSD out of my Mac Mini, Dave, a 240 gig.
Oh, yeah.
And I replaced it with the 1 terabyte that I have. I'm like, okay, now it's time. And what am I going to do with the SSD? Well, the Synology supports the concept of adding an SSD cache. So I put the SSD and repurposed it. So it's in the array here now, acting as a read cache. You can make it a read or a read write cache. They don't recommend write caching. I guess it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Okay. Yep.
But read caching. So it's acting as a read cache. So I'm smoking, man.
That's great.
It's great. I mean, but it's great they give you the capability with a lot of their units to add drives down the road if you decide you need them.
Right. 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 Cool.
It's only and I've seen on the market it's under $300.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. 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 That's cool, man. I have no experience with the expansion base, so I'm glad to hear it's effectively seamless. I mean, there's you can dig if you want, but it sounds like it just works. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that took a while, but it does a lot of stuff. Or it exposed me to a lot of the features of the system that I had.
That you already had. Before. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So there we go. Okay, cool. Moving
on. I got
a
quick question about that. I'm looking in here. I don't see that on their Synology site, but it's available on Amazon.
What am
I
missing? It's under, if you look under expansion, so it's not. Yeah, it's kind of hard to find under.
Because I was looking under network attached storage.
Which it's not. Yeah. It's just the expansion.
Gotcha. Yep. Okay.
So you look under expansion, and then they tell you which units are capable of taking what expansion units.
Yeah. That's a good question, Pete.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, that's why we have you here. Yeah,
I couldn't find it anywhere.
Yeah, no,
I go, why was it on Amazon but not on Synology?
You know, I'm going to, in the process of thanking Pete, I'm going to also talk about our chat room because you all serve a similar purpose. I mean, it's nice to hang out with you, Pete.
Yeah.
Right. But in terms of, you know,
when I'm gone, you got the chat room.
The tens of thousands of people here that listen to the show. You serve a purpose that's frankly quite irrelevant to the fact that you and I are friends. And that is that you ask the questions mid show that someone might have. And often it's more than just you.
Yeah.
And
I hope so.
That's the thing. And it helps speed things along with the conversation because now we don't have to wait a week to address this. And
no, Pete's the only idiot that had that question.
Well, sometimes,
you know,
but the chat room and the chat room is at macgeekab.com/stream. You know, the folks there, especially the regulars, but really anyone is totally welcome. And, they are listening along live and doing the same thing.
Sure.
So I want to say thank you to everyone at macgeekab.com/stream and thank you to you too, Pete. So yeah,
glad to be
good stuff. Okay. Back to cool stuff found here. Listener Gary suggests Mile IQ. He says, this app is for tracking business mileage and it's remarkable. Called Mile IQ, it tracks your driving in the background. The app does not have to be started or running. By default, it will ask you to classify each trip as personal or business. I used its intuitive interface to set hours that are most likely to be business driving, and it only asks me for trips during those hours now. Outside those hours, it tags trips as personal automatically, but of course, I could change them. The first 40 trips per calendar month are free, and then there's a $60 a year subscription. And Gary actually has a code for 20% off an annual subscription. My guess is Gary gets something out of it too, but there's nothing wrong with that. So we will put that in the show notes, and everybody can help each other out. So thanks, Gary. Very, very cool stuff. I like that idea. I rewind back to the days when I was doing a lot of business mileage driving, and I would have killed for something like this. My kingdom for an app like this 20 years ago. So, yeah. All right.
That's a cool thing, though. You look at all this stuff that's going on today, and you're talking about Synology's expansion and these other things that are going on. And I mean, 20 years ago, that wasn't even in the concept.
Right.
You know, for that matter, when the iPhone came out, it didn't have apps on it for the most part.
It only had Apple's apps.
Yeah,
it's exactly. True.
And then they were few and far between. What did they have? A half dozen apps, you know, clock, right. That kind of stuff. And now you use it to, you know,
do whatever.
Log scuba. Yeah, it's a pocket computer.
Yeah. Oh, so, totally. Yeah. And by the way, you can make phone calls on it, you know.
It has an app for that?
that's the funny thing is it's an app that a lot of people kind of move off their home screens. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Speaking of fun little apps, Todd has the suggestion of Message Plus. He said it was discussed actually on MacBreak Weekly a while back. He said they used it while traveling in Europe with a non-Verizon wireless SIM card and were still able to get their SMS messages and send SMSs. So that's the point of Message Plus, is it allows you to connect. I think it's only for Verizon customers because it is by Verizon, but it allows you access to your text messages in their system over non-Verizon networks. So my guess is it's doing it over a data connection and just connecting kind of like iMessage, but this actually gets you your SMSs because you're tying directly to Verizon. So very, very cool. I like it. Wolfgang brings us SiteHound Video. It's a home security software system, he says, which sounds boring, but this one is different and I think better for a few reasons. Number one, and I'll just list the reasons. I'm not going to tell you the numbers. You folks can count. We're all good enough for that here. He says, it has really good object detection and alerts. It offers an iOS app and web-based remote access. It's easy to use. It works well with many different IP cameras. The server software runs on a Mac. It has IFT integration, and it has a free trial. He says, I tried a bunch of alternatives and have been running SiteHound now for over a year. It's been way better than any other solution. And the best part is there are no monthly fees because it has smart object detection. You can find what you're looking for and only save the interesting clips, which uses much less drive space. It's been a real drag for my teenage son because he can't have parties when I'm out of town anymore. Yeah, very cool. Thanks, Wolfgang. I will share with you a piece of life advice that Lisa and I came up with this year, because we've got a webcam in the house, and it's a D-Link. It's an older D-Link one. It's mainly just aimed at Hector so that we can check on Hector D Bird while we are out of the house. And when we went to Mexico to go see Fish back in January, I guess it was, we thought, oh, you know, the kids are, they were going to be staying with my dad, but they were going to have access to the house. And we told my dad and the kids, look, if the kids want to be at the house, that's fine. You know, they don't need to be hyper supervised and all that. And I said to Lisa, well, yeah, we can check on them and find out, you know, at any point in time what they're doing. And I thought, wait a minute, I'm going to be on a beach in Mexico enjoying myself with my wife and I together. We're going to go to some concerts. We're going to have a really good time. It's a nice couple's weekend away. Why in the world would I want to know in real time what my kids think they're getting away with? That's only going to serve to ruin their weekend, certainly, but also mine. Like, I might just want to check the footage when I get back if I have reason to do so. And otherwise, I don't really need to know. You know,
there you go.
Trust, but verify.
Trust, but verify when necessary. I mean, look, if I get home and everything in the house is totally fine. The kids are fine.
Then you better check the video.
Exactly. Right. In that case, I need to look at the video because it's obvious something happened. That's right.
You know,
I did not look at the video, by the way, while we were away. So just so you know.
I still want to lobby for Hector Cam.
It exists. It's just, you know,
public Hector Cam.
Yeah. The problem with that is it is a camera that is a window into our home. And,
you could charge money for it. Yeah.
Yeah. We thought about it, but I don't want to have to think about, oh, wait a minute. Yeah. If I'm going to go over to, yeah, right. If I'm going to go mess with Hector, for example, I shouldn't be naked. Right. And now that's actually good advice, regardless of cameras,
exactly.
Because Hector has a very sharp beak, but, and she can take flight if and when she chooses, but you know, that kind of thing. So I don't want to subject the public to that. And there's times when I don't want to have to think about the public.
When she was Ambrosia's mascot, it was okay because they didn't.
She was in the office. Yeah.
Seeing what was in the office.
Sure. So, yeah. Very, very different. Yeah. Hector lives in our kitchen with us. And yes, the camera is mainly focused only on Hector, but she's in sort of a high traffic area. So it would be very common for you to see people walking back and forth in front of her cage. So we kind of leave it out. And our camera will do audio. For the most part, I have that off. I actually only turn on audio capture when we are going to be away so that I have the ability to hear what's going on in the house.
So can you talk to Hector?
No.
You have audio enabled?
Audio.
Okay, listen.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a computer right next to her, so I can wake up that iMac, and actually I can use, what is it, say, right? Speak? What's the terminal command? Is it speak, say? Yeah, it's say. Yeah, so if I say, hello, Hector. You guys didn't hear it, but Pete and I did. I'm trying to think of how I would even begin to capture that to send to you real time here, and I know exactly how to do it, and I'm not going to. Oh, yeah, I am, because I'm foolish like this. Let's see. Can I do it? Can I? No, I don't know that I can. I'm sure I can. I'd have to think more about this. System audio.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Hang on. Are we still here?
I heard myself. That's bad.
Yeah. So just stop talking for a second.
Hello, Hector.
There you go. So now, that's that. We're going to... This is like Apple did during their thing. I'm editing my Audio Hijack Pro, or not Audio Hijack Pro, Audio Hijack session in real time while we're recording this show. That's a really, really bad idea. But there you go. So
what
yeah,
could go wrong.
So that's the tip is from the terminal. I literally just typed say space hello space Hector and you heard the results. So there you go. I'm going to leave that alone now because I'm definitely going to screw something up.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Wolfgang. Just to wrap that up, the thing that I use our webcam with is Synology surveillance station. So if you have a Synology disk station, it has surveillance station in it. You just by nature of owning a Synology get that software free, and I believe two cameras can be connected with the license that comes with it. If you want to connect more cameras, then you can buy that or lease that license from Synology. So, okay. James, speaking of the terminal, it's amazing how these things come together. Actually, no, this isn't a terminal thing. This is, oh, where is James? I'll find it. I swear. Yeah, it's called Cot Editor is his cool stuff found. Yeah. He says, I know you've talked about BB Edit as a text editor, and I use one called Cot Editor, which he says he finds similar, or at least for his purposes. So we will put that, a link to the App Store in, and you can check that out. It looks, it's got some text highlighting. I don't know how it does with multiple files or anything. I haven't downloaded it, but it looks like it does... it's an editor, which is good. So cool. Thanks, James. Fun stuff. I like it. Curtis he's got something to tell us. Curtis says, in preparation for a recent trip, I used walter.app, and that's W-A-L-T-R at W-A-L-T-R. It's at softarino.com. We've talked about Walter on the show before. And he says, I've used Walter app to load TV shows and movies from my Mac to my iOS devices. The process is drop dead simple and fast. And he's right. Walter was kind of that magic app that came out that allows you to put movies natively on your iPhone and watch them natively on your iPhone that would normally not be natively available to be put on your iPhone. He says you launch Walter, you plug in your iOS device using the Lightning to USB cable, and you drag and drop video files into the Walter window. Videos are played in the iOS Videos app. Metadata is transferred along with the moving pictures. And Walter indicated how much free space was available on my device. On that trip, I had a lot of downtime in the evenings. I burned through my TV shows and I wanted more. I used my $5 a month Plex Pass along with the iOS Plex app to download, i.e. sync, more content from my Plex library at home to my mobile device over a painfully slow internet connection. Streaming was theoretically possible, but not happening because of the service speeds that I had where I was. In this case, TV shows played in the Plex app. Metadata is transferred along there. So between Walter and Plex, Curtis got everything he needed. And it's a nice little use case story. So thanks for sharing that with us. And Walter is pretty cool. It's actually quite magical. So, all right, moving along. We're almost to the bottom of our cool stuff found list here. 26 minutes into the show with some tangents. Jason tells us about Air Mount. And Air Mount is something he told us about on Twitter. And Jason is notorious for telling us about cool stuff found on Twitter. I like it. He says Air Mount allows you to access your iPhone from your Mac, no cloud and no magic. You do need a newer Mac to do this. And you can see your iPhone photos, videos, and documents as a drive from your Mac's Finder and drag and drop photos between multiple iOS devices because it can see them simultaneously, works without internet. Air Mount creates a, as they say, a direct high-speed wireless connection between nearby devices. I forget what the technology is. I looked at it when this first came in, but you need a mid-2012 Mac or later. So it's using, it's not using Bluetooth LE, but it will, but I think it's using the same, it's using Wi-Fi in the same way that, that Handoff does, I believe. So that's where that comes from. Pretty cool though. We'll put that in the show notes.
That looks cool. I wonder, do you know if it gets into other stuff or just the native like photos and.
I haven't used it.
Yeah.
Jason just told us about it.
I'm going to play with that because there's some stuff on my phone I can't find.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I haven't messed with this, but I wanted to just talk about the OneNote Evernote importer for the Mac. So Evernote is a third party or a company that makes a notes app, right? OneNote is Microsoft's notes app, and you get some free storage from Microsoft with just an account. And of course, if you have an Office 365 subscription, I think you get up to a terabyte of storage from Microsoft, and your OneNote database can fit in there. And now there is an importer to pull data from Evernote into OneNote. Evernote changed their pricing model lately, and a lot of people who are using the free account did not like it because you could only be signed into a limited number of devices at a time. So Microsoft's OneNote Evernote importer is a nice way to get your Evernote stuff into OneNote. I'm very, very curious about Apple's Notes app, especially how that's evolving. They changed the foundation of it a couple of iOS iterations ago, and now we're finally starting to see some of the real benefits of that. So I'm still an Evernote user, but I've started using iOS Notes, especially for music stuff, because it allows me to very quickly scratch out scribbles and diagrams and you know, rhythmic charts right inside of a note that also has text. And that's something that I really don't have an easy time doing on any other Notes app. So I'm curious where Apple's Notes app is going to go, because it might be the thing to replace Evernote for me. And certainly if you don't use a Notes app currently, I would say start with Apple's Notes app. It might do everything you need.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Because I found there's been things like, you know, I'm trying to draw somebody where I've left their car in a parking lot rather than trying to describe it. You know, second row left.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and OneNote users swear by it. So this is one of those Microsoft products, and there are many, that people seem to really love. So What do you use? I know you use Evernote, at least for Mac Geekab, John, because that's what we share our Mac Geekab stuff with. But do you use Evernote or anything else for other purposes?
Notes.
Yeah, you do use Notes. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So on my iOS currently device, I'm still trying to figure out what to do with my iPad. I wonder if I want to get it fixed. Hello?
Hey, we're getting a weird... Skype's just got weird on us. There, Mr. Brown. Oh,
okay. Didn't get weird to me. But yeah, I'm using Notes right now. Okay. Between my phone and my Mini. And yeah, for stuff that I want to share, works for me.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
So I got a couple more here. This will be quick. All right. So one here. I don't think we got it in the last CSF, but we got it in this one here, Dave. Ready?
I am ready. I'm getting a lot of packet loss from you, John. I'm going to pause the show here, and we're going to sort out what might be going on, and we'll be right back. All right, John, I think I've brought us back in here, and I think we're okay. So why don't you tell us about your, you've got two more things on the Cool Stuff Found list.
Yep. Got two more things here. So one is from our friends at Micromat, probably best known for Tech Tool Pro. But there's a freebie that they decided to release. That's a very quick and dirty, thing that checks your Mac health, and it's called Mac Check. Pretty much it'll show you when you run it, the 8 tests that it does. So it tells you the status of the power on self test, does an IO check, battery test, memory test, smart test, a RAID status if you have a RAID, volume structure, and partition map.
Cool.
So, thought it'd be nice to mention. It just came out recently. And then here's one, Dave. So in the past, when we were talking about reading the console on iOS devices,
yeah,
I was like, oh, well, you know, there's the iPhone configuration utility that I got like ages ago. And I'm like, ah, but it doesn't work anymore. I can't read the console. Well, that's because, dude, that's old and busted. The new hotness is something that they call Apple Configurator 2. And this is what you should be using. I just had never seen if there was an update.
Huh?
So it's from Apple, performs very similar function. The main intent of it is to let you configure a large amount of iOS devices or Apple TV. So it'll deal with iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, I guess, and even Apple TVs. So if you need to deploy them. So for enterprise users, it's probably a cool thing. But it also gives you some detailed information. If you plug your device in, it'll tell you a bit more than iTunes does as far as some of these unique IDs and addresses.
Sure.
You know, MAC addresses, stuff like that. But it also, when you click on console, unlike the prior tool, which kind of got broken with the way they changed the iPhone or iOS, this one lets you see the console. So absolutely free from Apple. So Apple Configurator 2.
Cool. I like it. That's a nice find, man.
Sounds like you never got around to checking it out either.
No, this is news to me. So that's why we do this show, right? I didn't say it in the intro, but the goal is to learn. We've raised the bar for new things every time we get together. And there, that's at least one for me. And I think there were a couple others in the Cool Stuff Found where I got to learn things. But I want to make sure everyone leaves and knows about our first sponsor. And that is Eero. At Eero.com, and I'll remind you that coupon code MGG gets you free overnight shipping. Eero is enterprise-grade Wi-Fi made super easy so that anyone can deploy and successfully use this at their house. That's the concept of what Eero is, and that is what Eero does. I've set it up. I had it running here, and I've set it up, and my dad is running Eero at his house now. And it's flawless. You buy the Eero kit, and you can buy them one piecemeal as well. You can buy individual Eeros, but really, if you want to get started, you want to buy the 3 Eero kit, which they have. It's $4.99. Again, MGG gives you free overnight shipping, and it comes, as I said, with 3 units. They are all exactly the same. One of them you plug in, and it becomes your router, and then the other two, you put strategically throughout your home to expand your Wi-Fi signal. Now those, if you have Ethernet in the walls, you can use Ethernet and plug it into Eero, and it will use that as its backbone. If not, it uses actually both wireless channels as its backbone, but it does it intelligently so that you're getting the best speed to your client devices that you possibly can. And it all happens automatically. There is no crazy configuration to do. Of course, you can do port forwarding if you want. You can do DHCP address reservations if you want. It supports universal plug and play so that your games and Skype and all of that stuff just automatically can manage the router. All of that stuff can happen no problem, but you don't have to mess with it if you don't want. It's all set up with an iOS app. And it's very easy. I can manage and actually see the health of my dad's Wi-Fi network from anywhere because you just set it up and do it with your phone. And so it doesn't matter where I am. I can check on it and see what's going on. And I can even turn off his computer or turn off access to his computer if I so choose. I haven't done that yet because he hasn't given me reason to. But, it's really interesting. And especially, you know, I got to talk to Nick, their CEO and their founder, one of their founders. I am not sure if he's the only one, but I got to talk to him about this. And, you know, we're living in this world and where there's a lot of people talking about multi-user MIMO, right, where you can have multiple devices talking simultaneously to one router. Now, obviously, you can have multiple devices connected simultaneously to one router. We're all used to that. But multi-user MIMO allows you to have the router actively sending or receiving data from multiple devices at once, which is not normally what happens. Normally, it's you send a little bit and then move on to the next one. And it's sort of this, you know, round robin thing. He feels, and I like where he's going with this, because right now, I bet none of you, I would say at least 90% of you, don't have any client devices that support multi-user MIMO. And it will be a long time before we have critical mass of those. And it only makes sense once you have critical mass. Eero is a different concept. Instead of going down the multi-user MIMO path, they went down the path of having multiple access points, effectively getting you the ability to have multiple devices, multiple client devices, talking on your network simultaneously by having multiple access points. And the access points are tied together with their own smarts, allowing them to hand clients off intelligently and manage the flow and balance your network without you having to think about a thing. So this works with all client devices, not just the very, very latest, which don't even exist for Apple users. And it really does work. My dad, you know, he's always kind of been plagued with Wi-Fi problems. And now the way he talks about it, he says, thank you for bathing us in Wi-Fi. He says, I can go anywhere on my property now. You know, we kind of put things in the right places. And he's like, it just doesn't matter where I am. We all can see Wi-Fi and get on the internet. No problem. No questions asked. So you got to check it out. Eero.com, Eero.com. And remember to use coupon code MGG for two reasons. Number one, it gets you free overnight shipping so you can have enterprise-grade Wi-Fi in your home tomorrow. And by using coupon code MGG, it tells them that, that you know, you bought and heard about it from us. So appreciate it. And hopefully you appreciate it too. All right. I know that went a little longer than most sponsor spots, but I feel like, you know, it's so close to the content that we do here at Mac Geek Gab. I can't help but getting a little bit geeky about the way it all works and all that. So hopefully there's some intellectual value there, even for folks that are already using Eero or have already made their decision. So, all right, John, this week, I don't want to spend a whole show or even more than maybe 5-10 minutes talking about this, but was Apple had their announcement this week. I ordered a jet black iPhone 7, much to my I'm not sure that I will want to keep it long term, but I want to, you know, it's what we do here, so I want to at least test it out. But you know, I'm an iPhone SE kind of person these days, and I really like the 4-inch iPhone. So there's no 4-inch version of the 7 yet. So jet black iPhone 7 is the smallest I can go. So I got one of those. That wasn't the only thing. I did not order a new Apple Watch.
Which provider? Because I think I have some relevant information. You may know where I'm going with this.
I got the AT&T one because I'm okay. I'm an AT&T customer. So you know.
Okay.
Yep.
But you've heard the 7, unlike the 6. So the 7 is that if you get it with AT&T and I forget, I think one other provider.
Yep.
There's only a GSM radio.
That's right.
There is not a CDMA radio. Now, it's funny because somebody posted something about that, I think in our Facebook group or just on Facebook in general.
Yep.
And someone else replied, well, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that the Verizon phone comes with both. So
correct.
For resale. So consider carefully when you're getting a phone.
Yeah.
What choice you make, because in my humble opinion, the AT&T one would be less desirable if you want to sell it, because only AT&T people can use it.
That's interesting.
Potentially.
Yeah, maybe I should return this and get a Verizon one and then just put my AT&T SIM in it.
That should work for you.
Yeah, so how do you get it unlocked, though?
What's that?
How do you get it unlocked, then?
Well, I bought it
flat. I bought it flat out from
Apple.
Gotcha.
And okay. if you order from Apple, even on their payment plan, I just paid for it out of the gate because it's simpler and it makes returns easier, frankly.
Right.
But if you order on Apple's payment plan, you're under contract with Apple for the payments, but the phone is unlocked when you get it.
You're just bringing your phone to AT&T and then, yeah. Okay. Yep. Cause I did that with mine. I got a T-Mobile phone. So it was unlocked, when I did the 6S or the 6 Plus rather.
Yeah.
So
oddly, what's interesting too, is that, so if you are near a Verizon corporate store, which we happen to have one of these in Fairfield, Connecticut.
Yep.
From what I've seen on their site, I can actually trade in my 6S, which I'm still paying off, and I'm able to trade it in and take no penalty.
Sure.
They'll set me up with a 7 and let me continue on my payment plan.
Oh, nice.
So I don't pay any extra.
Right.
I don't know if I want to, Dave, because I got a lot of cases and nifty gadgets for the 6, and from what I understand, the cases for the 6 and the 7 are not the same.
They're slightly different. Yeah, it depends on what you're doing. Like screen protectors, from what I understand, will be exactly the same between both of them. But a case would have to be different.
But the phone looks like a solid incremental upgrade. The 7 has some spiffy camera features. The 7 Plus. Well, the 7 does, but the 7 Plus has more because they got the two lenses. And
right.
So they can do all sorts of fun stuff with that.
So we can talk about we don't need to go point by point through everything when we can, if we feel like there's something to say about every point, but I wanted to just kind of open the floor and talk about anything that happened during the event in no particular order that appeals to any of us. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was iCloud collaboration. This is kind of a big deal because In my world, and certainly in our Mac Geek Gab world right now, we are using Google Docs actively at the moment while we're recording this show. We have the timestamps are saved in a Google Doc as we go through, and then the show notes are built in a Google Doc. And the reason is collaboration. I can collaborate. I can put stuff in. You folks can edit. You can hear Pilot Pete typing in the background. He's putting stuff in. I mean, it's how this works. And having all of that live, is something that's just a natural part of the workflow of what so many people do. And so having that ability kind of permeate throughout iCloud and iWork, I guess we call it. I don't know. I don't even know what the right name is for it. But anyway, yeah, I guess it's iWork. I think that's a huge thing. It got some stage time. I feel like in the discussion since then has been, oh my God, headphone jack. And nobody's really talking about the fact that iWork saw this pretty significant upgrade. Or enhancement, I guess is the right way to say it. So I'm looking forward. The question is, as long as they do it well, and now the power is starting to flicker here. So this is getting fun.
Even though it's bright and sunny out, you know,
it is bright and sunny out. Yeah.
We got some big storms hitting this.
We do. Are you still with me, John?
Yep.
All right.
Here.
Okay. Yeah, there's big storms that are about to blast through here. So we'll see. We'll see how we do on the show, folks. I'm glad we got through Cool Stuff Found. Yeah. So anything from you, John, before we lose you?
The rumors were right. And I got to say, it's funny because I've seen some people, especially one person you and I both know, Dave, who was going ballistic over the removal of the audio port. And it's like, I would say the way that Phil presented it, it's funny because Steve used the same argument to kind of a
John? Yeah. Boom, 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 boom. We lost John. And, you know, wah. I'm going to take that as a sign. We really don't need to be the show that that rehashes the headphone jack thing again and again and again. I'm gonna pause things here against my better judgment, and we'll see if we can get Mr. Braun back. Wait a minute. I hear it trying to call John Braun. I'm gonna pause things. Give me a second here. You're back. Okay, I didn't have to pause things, but the power flickered. I don't want to be yet another podcast that just sits here and obsesses about the headphone jack. So you've got 20.
No, I won't.
You've got 20 more seconds to talk about the headphone jack. I have 20 seconds to say something, and we're done about it. How's that sound?
All I was saying is they give me an adapter. It'd be a reason for me at some point in the future to revisit wireless options. And Belkin makes a splitter thing that will let you listen and charge at the same time. So.
Yes. Courageous is
the way he said it versus how Steve, you know, phrased abandoning Flash. It didn't go over as well, but I understand the point. You got to move on.
Yeah. All right. So Courageous is removing the headphone jack. Chicken is putting an adapter in the box, acknowledging that people still need to use the headphone jack. So I'm not sure where that goes. I will say this because this is the important part. Bluetooth audio will never be the quality of Bluetooth audio will never match what you can get over a wire or over AirPlay. And mm-hmm. that's an important thing. It's not that wireless audio is bad. It's that Bluetooth audio is naturally compressed. There is no way to send audio over Bluetooth that is not compressed. And on Apple's iPhones, they don't support the highest quality Bluetooth codec that exists, one called aptX, APTX. So the Macs support aptX, iPhones don't. So just bear that in mind. I will say this. I am so happy that Apple is doing wireless headphones because the concept, if you've never experienced it before, I got to experience it a little earlier this year with something called Earin, E-A-R-I-N, that I met at CES, and I have a set of them here, and they are truly wireless earbuds. There are no, just like Apple's things, there are no wires. And with Earin, there's nothing that hangs out of your ear at all. It just, you put these things in your ear and you're done. And it is the most liberating thing to be able to listen to music with no wires attached to your head. And no wires. I've had other wireless speakers that, you know, have, or wireless earphones that either go over the head or connect with a cable between the two ears and all that stuff. And that's fine. But having it truly wireless is an oddly liberating thing in a very, very good way. So I'm glad that Apple is doing that with the AirPods. I don't think the AirPods will fit everyone because the EarPods don't, and they look to be the same. I don't expect the sound quality of the AirPods to be awesome, but of course, I haven't tested them yet. I didn't go out this week. Brian did. He said they sounded good. So who knows? But we'll find out. And but it opens the market, it legitimizes the market, and that's a good thing. Go ahead.
Okay, can I have 20 seconds? Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So, hey, long and short of it is, I've been using Bluetooth wireless for years on my phone and traveling, and I've got to say, I have, knock wood, I've never been questioned by cabin crew about, you know, hey, what's that, you know, the whole radio thing and all that, too. So no one's ever given me any grief about having that radio on. I can show them I'm in the airplane mode, and I just turn Bluetooth on individually. And then I'm able to watch movies and listen to music and that kind of stuff. So I've never had any problem in the cabin.
Right.
But yeah, I love it. It's liberating not to have that wire stuck to your phone.
Yeah, it's so great.
Speaking of wires, what are you doing, Dave?
I noticed that the outboard reverb unit did not survive the power flicker as well as I wanted it to, which is odd because I'm pretty sure it's plugged into my battery backup, but the clip light on it was just on.
Oh, there you go.
So let me make sure it's actually, hey, yeah, it's working. Okay, good. All right, good. That's cool. One of the secrets to recording Mac.
We're talking about phones. Wireless, and Dave is plugging in 1,000 wires in the back of his machine.
Oh, yeah, high quality audio over wires. Yeah.
There you go.
Sweet. Anything else we want to talk about with the announcement? Anything about the watch? Anything? Well, actually, Brian Monroe in the chat room points out that two of the big things were Mario coming from Nintendo to iOS.
It's a Mario. Yeah. Like, wow. And people were huge. Like, I mean, it was like, you know, seeing the Beatles or something. I mean,
yeah.
having the big cheese there actually presenting this new game and targeting iOS was like, wow.
I think that's a pretty big deal. Yeah. And Brian Monroe points out the Nike thing, which is very interesting to see Nike partnering with Apple on, especially on the watch. It interesting.
So now finally, though, the phone thing that may coerce me or may convince me to upgrade at some point in the future.
Yeah.
But so the camera. So they introduced a lot of things that people who like cameras are into. So optical stabilization is pretty important if you want to take decent pictures.
And that's now standard on the 7. It used to just be the Plus, right, that had optical stabilization.
Right.
Yeah.
F1.8 aperture, that's nice. 6-element lens. And if my notes are correct here, it now supports RAW, which for the pro photographers, that's nice versus JPEG or some other format that tend to lose some data, whereas RAW is RAW.
RAW
is
RAW.
Take up space, which the other thing, yeah, I think they upped the storage now, so there's no 16 gig, right? Or even 32. Is there a 32?
There's
a
32.
Where are they starting?
So there still is a 16 gig. This is the important thing to remember.
Well, I thought they abandoned it.
They didn't talk about it, but there is a 16 gig iPhone SE, right? So if you go, and this is interesting, in Apple's...
But not the 7. The 7...
Right, but in Apple's PR library, they talk now about the iPhone family, which that's not a new concept for them, but the iPhone family... As of, Wednesday, includes the 7 Plus, the 7, and the SE. So the SE is still given top billing, at least in terms of that kind of stuff. And there is a 16 gig version of the SE. So they're treating the SE as a current phone, not last year's model, which I find very interesting and hopeful as a 4-inch iPhone lover, preferer, and user. I'm hoping that when the 7S comes out next year, we get one in the 4-inch size. And I think that'll happen. I do. Did we lose John again?
No. I mean,
oh, okay. All right, good. He just got quiet.
It's a quiet Skype connection.
I know.
It's
perfect. Yeah, it's perfect. Exactly.
Too
yeah.
perfect.
Too perfect. So, yeah, interesting stuff. I'm looking forward to it. It's always fun. New gadgets, fun stuff. I did not find a compelling reason for me to upgrade to the Watch 2, the Watch Series 2. I am not someone that uses the watch while running. So GPS on the watch, I use it when I cycle. But having my phone with me while I cycle is no big deal. I would probably do that anyway. So the GPS on the phone is just fine. And the speed, of course, more speed is always preferred and better. But with watchOS 3 having just or about to be released, I should say, I have it on my watch because I've been using the developer betas. That gives me the speed enhancement that I felt I wanted. Not that faster wouldn't be better. But so I have not chosen to go down the watch path yet. That may change, though.
Yeah.
I reserve the right to change my mind.
And I guess also now both of the major products, the watch and the phone, advertise various levels of water resist or proofing.
Yeah, well, no one says waterproof. Rolex said it for years, but they're the only watch company that ever even used that word. But yeah, so water resistance. Yeah. Yeah. Now the current watch, I know plenty of people that swim with it. So we have like Series 0, which was the first Apple Watch, the one that you could buy today. And then Series 1, which is Series 0 with the new processor, and then Series 2, which is truly the new watch. The people with the Series 0, as I'll call it, have been able to swim with it fine. And anybody with a 6S or later, which includes the 6S Plus and the SE, has basically had a phone that would, if not be water resistant, survive an hour underwater.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
they don't advertise that, do they?
No, they don't. But I see, I think that was smart for Apple not to advertise that. I think smart to do it and roll it out in the market and see, okay, we think this worked. We don't want to advertise it because we don't have to.
Right.
So let's just put it out there and see what happens and maybe tip some of the right people to talk about it so that there's enough discussion and testing and all of that that happens without us, at arm's length. And then... If in fact we were right, then when the iPhone 7 comes out, we say, hey, by the way, it's water resistant. IP67, you're good to go.
Nice.
Right?
Now you said from the 6S, not the 6.
6S.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I fixed it immediately, found new seals in the 6S that were not present in the 6.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep. Yep. And people have done tests. Yeah. You can find them on YouTube, an hour underwater for any of those three models of phone. And you know, you take it out and it's like, yeah. Okay.
Wow.
You got to shake the water out of the headphone jack and the speaker.
Well, there's that.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it was underwater for an hour.
Yeah, of course. Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because I've been too careful with my watch, too. I generally don't get it wet. I didn't realize you could swim with it.
Say that. And they have made changes to the watch series, too, in terms of its water resistance. So, you know, but
so you don't want to scuba dive with it, though. The pressure is going to.
No. Yeah. No, but the new one, you could. I mean, down to 50 meters.
Whoa.
It's right. It's rated to 50.
Wow.
I know.
That's cool.
It's cool. Yeah. Yeah.
What's my heart rate while I'm looking at this big, great white chart?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or what was my heart rate while I was looking at it? That's where the watch is really handy, right? Is the tracking over time. All right. Anything else before we, I think we're going to skip all these follow-ups, John, that we have on the agenda and move to some of these questions to introduce some new topics, and then we'll do some follow-ups next week. But anything on the Apple event before we go there? No?
I said one thing that got a pretty interesting reaction from a lot of people. I posted about the event, and I said, old people, if you're upset about the technology and music choices being made today, reminder, you're old. Because that artist, I mean, that was above my head. That was something where I'm like, you know, it was just different. I'm like,
talking about Sia?
First off, I'm like, who's Sia? I'd never heard of her. And then she was doing like interpretive dance and all this wacky stuff. And Tim's a cool dude, man.
That's right.
And also the people in the car in the beginning, I didn't know who either of them
were. You didn't know James Corden carpool karaoke?
I've seen him, but it's not somebody I follow.
And Pharrell, right? Pharrell was in the car with him too. I guess perhaps this is a byproduct of me having teenage children, but I think part of it's just that being a musician, I tend to like try to absorb anything new.
Yeah.
But
so that Tim Cook hangs with the cool cats.
He does. Yeah. Yeah. I highly recommend the carpool karaoke episode with Stevie Wonder. It's fun. So there you go.
All right. And that's all I got to say about that.
Okay, cool. So Bob has a question. He says, where are we talking about here? He says, my Apple TV is taking over and not in a good way. I'm in the middle of cutting the cord and have attached an antenna to my TV for OTA alongside my Apple TV over the air OTA. My setup went off without a hitch, but now a few days later, when I try to switch to the TV, it automatically jumps back to my HDMI source for the Apple TV. If I stop on several inactive sources until it finds no source, I can keep it sticking to the main TV, but that's not going to work with the rest of the family and just confound my attempts to save some money. I love that when I turn on the Apple TV, it sets my source automatically and correctly and turns the TV on. But what the heck is going on with this switching where it didn't do that before? I don't want to turn that feature off, so I'm looking for a fix, of which there's not much mention on the Googles. Yeah, there is not a fix for this. I have experienced it too. It seems like a software update, and it might be one that came, you know, 6 months ago, has made the Apple TV a little too overzealous in terms of how it deals with what's called HDMI CEC. That's the name of the protocol that's used to control other devices up the HDMI chain. And this is exactly it. You can turn this off in settings on your Apple TV settings, remotes and devices. And then there's an option for control TVs and receivers that you can turn off. And that will theoretically disable this, but I'm still experiencing some level of this where when I have everything turn on, if I'm not using the Apple TV and I turn everything on, my receiver then immediately turns off because that's what's connected via HDMI to the Apple TV. So I've been trying to solve that problem, and turning the that option off on the Apple TV did not solve this for me. So that's the only thing I can recommend, though, and then maybe a universal remote to kind of control everything. You know, I'm a big, big, big fan of the Logitech Harmony One. So your mileage may vary, but that's all I got. You have anything on this one, John, before we move on?
I've been seeing some chatter about something related, and I think that's the HDCP protocol. I've been seeing people talk about that, how that causes some problems too, which is the HDMI copy protection.
The copy protection. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
And yep. Depending now, yeah, I think from iTunes, you can play things because I guess they licensed it and enabled technology. But
right.
Trying to target some third-party displays, you may not be able to see what you paid for.
Sure,
it doesn't properly implement that. I'll have to dig into that. But I've been seeing it. I've been seeing a lot of chatter about it. How it's okay. It's just a mess.
Yeah. Okay. And then while we're on this subject, Richard asks, he said, he's basically looking for the holy grail of media setups. He says, I'm building a new home and therefore have the luxury of putting Cat 6 cables throughout. Smart. My plans include an equipment cabinet with a cable modem, my cable box and DVR, a router, and a very large Ethernet switch. I can easily add a media server and or a NAS to the closet. Now, here's the hard part. I currently have a large iTunes library, 2 terabytes, that I serve to my TVs via Apple TVs. What I want to have is a way to serve cable TV and or DVR stuff to any of my TVs without renting Comcast cable boxes and or having multiple set-top boxes at every TV unit. Something that'll serve my home media, something for streaming, cable TV and DVR, and all of that in a single box. Maybe this is a dream, but in my dream, I only have one box and remote per TV, and each TV has a great sounding soundbar. I hope this makes some sense. Is there a better way than multiple set-top boxes and remotes for each TV? There is, Richard. And I think, honestly, that TiVo is going to be your best friend in this, at least, you know, right now. They're Bolt and Romeo, but I would definitely look at the Bolt devices support exactly what you want. The idea behind TiVo now is that you have one main box. So we'll call it the Bolt, although, again, the Romeo can do this. The Bolt is sort of the new platform. So you have the TiVo Bolt. You connect that to one of your TVs and you connect it to your incoming cable, of course, from Comcast. And then you also connect it to the internet. And actually, this can be done in a variety of ways. But essentially, you do that. Now, obviously, that box has access to your cable stream so you can watch live TV. It can record your shows for you. And because it's this set-top box, it can play things from a Plex media library. It can play Netflix. It can play your on-demand stuff. It's got a fairly wide offering of services that it can do for you. So and it's got universal search, which means that once you've connected all your services and you say, look, I want to watch, you know, an episode of Seinfeld or whatever, it's going to find it on whatever services have it. And then you can just play it from there. Amazon Prime, all that stuff is able to be linked in with your TiVo. So that's one TV and gets you that. And then TiVo has the TiVo Mini. And the TiVo Mini, and with your main TiVo, you're going to need to buy a subscription. You either buy a lifetime subscription or you pay monthly, or I think they've got annual options and that sort of thing. The TiVo Mini, you just buy, and you buy it outright, and there is no, it's $150, there is no subscription, and that's what you plug into all your other TVs. And it has no content on it, but it all ties back to your main TiVo box, and then it can watch live TV, and it's all streaming this over IP in your house. It'll either do Ethernet cables, or it will do, it use coax, and it uses Mocha, which we've talked about here, and works very, very well. And I'm doing this at my house, and it works great. And so now you've got TiVo content streaming to all of your TVs via these TiVo Minis. And of course, that means that you can see Plex and you can see live TV and you can see everything that's been recorded on your DVR, and you have one library. You're not managing multiple DVRs in different places of your house, and it's gorgeous. I will point this out, and I have to remind you all, and this will become clear. It's Sunday the 11th while I'm having this conversation. The TiVo Bolt has 4 tuners. You may not feel you need four tuners, but as soon as you start heading down the TiVo Mini path, you'll realize you want at least four and maybe more. And the reason is that the TiVo Bolt, when it's paired to a TiVo Mini, one of the tuners is used for each Mini that's actively streaming something. So if it's not actively streaming, the tuner's not locked up by this. But if it is actively streaming, then you've got a tuner dedicated to that. I don't know why it's that way. It's not actually using a tuner if it's sending you content from, you know, the DVR library, but that's just how it works. It may be a CPU-based thing. I don't know, but I know that that's the limitation. So if you want to record two things on your main TiVo and stream, you need those extra tuners, even though you're not actually using them as tuners. So as you're looking at this, you want to think about how many TVs you're going to have, and more tuners equals better in terms of managing those multiple devices. So, investigate that for yourself as you buy, especially throughout the week. So, good stuff. But TiVo, I think, is your friend here. It's very much your friend. So there you go.
I concur. Very quickly, my various devices, TiVo Series 3 for some things. I still have a cable subscription. Apple TV for some other things. And Synology for some other things. And that's pretty much my media world is right. Those three devices.
Yeah. And Plex will run on a Synology. So if you've got that, you're not going to be able to stream your iTunes library to your TiVo directly. But Plex is free and will point at your iTunes library. So you just need to run it on your Mac and you're good to go. You don't have to run it on a Synology. It'll run just fine on a Mac. In fact, in many cases, it runs better on a Mac because your Mac has a better CPU than your Synology device does.
I've got a question that you may or may not be able to answer. All right, let's stump the geeks. DirecTV customer. DirecTV has recently gone back to having TiVo boxes available.
Yeah.
Do you think this will work? Or
no, I don't. Well, okay. I don't know enough about what DirecTV is using. The last time they partnered with TiVo, it was TiVo software in a DirecTV box.
Okay.
So I
bet it's the same way again.
You're getting the box from DirecTV,
right?
I don't think you get all of the same capabilities that you get if you buy a standalone TiVo box.
Right. Because I remember my wife loved TiVo, and when we went to a DVR setup as opposed to that, she missed right away the TiVo capabilities and the almost human interface you dealt with. Good interface, I guess, is what it boils down to.
So there you go. And I will say that there's a lot of people, Comcast customers, that are very happy with X1. Former TiVo, recovering TiVo users that, for whatever reason, decided not to, usually financial, decided not to buy a new TiVo unit when their old one died and just, pay the monthly fee to Comcast for the X1. And people have been happy with that. I don't know how far it's going to go into getting stuff from your media library. That's just worth investigating. I don't know enough about that, but TiVo, especially the kind of the new TiVo model, as I described with the first, the Romeo, now the Bolt, and then the TiVo Minis, is a real, wonderful thing. And it's the new paradigm and works really, really well. So we've got a couple TVs in the house that all they have on them is a TiVo stream. I'm lying. One of them has a TiVo. I called it a TiVo stream, TiVo Mini. And it's got an Xbox on it too, because that's different, but
there you go. Yeah. Richard has the advantage of setting up from scratch though, which is huge.
Right.
And I would say to others who don't have that advantage, what I'm using and I really like is some of the Logitech remotes.
That's what I was saying before, the Harmony, the Harmony One.
Yeah. I mean, they're so interactive and they do a really good job of figuring everything out. So,
that remote series is awesome. It's super easy to use and works very, very well. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes too. It's one of my favorites is that. So we use it in the house. So, all right. What else do we have here? Time to go to Joe. I think we've got a little bit of time here, John. You want to do Joe or Larry? We're going to pick one more. You pick it, John.
Let's
do Joe.
Larry.
Okay.
Well, Larry, just because I've been through it, but I'll let you start.
All right, we'll do. We'll go to Larry here. That's fine. Larry, I might actually be really quick. So, Larry writes. He says there are times when I want to turn my passcode off because I don't want to have to enter the passcode every time I wake the phone up. Because of this, my Apple Pay information gets deleted, and then when I want to turn it back on, I need to re-enter and authorize all my cards. Isn't there a way to save everything so that I don't have to enter it every time? And the answer is no, at least as far as I know, and I'm curious to your experience, John, but Apple Pay and your passcode are linked. And if you remove your passcode, Apple Pay information goes away. Perhaps, though, you could set your passcode so that it waits 4 hours before being required again, right? Settings, passcode, or touch ID and passcode, depending on the capabilities of your phone, and then require passcode. You should be able to set that. If touch ID is on, it needs your passcode immediately, and there's no way to change that. But if you turn touch ID off, you should be able to set your passcode to something less frequent. So any thoughts on that, Mr. Braun?
The thought or the experience that I'll share is I learned that your card data is not stored in a backup. Remember when I went through my little adventure with my iPhones getting destroyed?
Yeah.
The thing is, even though I had an iCloud backup and both a local backup, though I think restoring from the iCloud backup wasn't too painful. It took longer, but your Apple Pay data is not associated with your backup. Because I had to re-enter every one of my freaking cards again.
Yeah. Well, it's tied to the device. It wouldn't. Although you're right.
Yes, it is.
Even with the same device, the backup just doesn't have it. That's true.
And here's a little tip. There is another place where you can go to actually remove that data if you would like to. Say your device has been compromised, or someone you know is going on a shopping spree and you'd like to stop it. if you log into iCloud, preferences, devices, it'll show you which devices have Apple Pay enabled. If you click on the device, you will see an option saying remove all Apple Pay data. So just thought I'd share that.
That's cool. I did not know that was there until the other night. I was messing around with something and found that. I was like, oh yeah, that I like this. That's smart. It's good.
Cool. Yeah. Now, the thing that's annoying me here, though, is that I'm looking at my Apple TV, and it's named Apple TV / 68.
Mm-hmm. It's good stuff.
Why?
That's Bonjour Sleep Proxy for you.
Well, I don't have it because I don't have an Apple router. Not as my primary.
Oh, no, my friend. If you have an Apple TV on your network a time capsule or really any Apple router, whether it's in router mode or bridge mode, those all can act as Bonjour Sleep proxies now.
Oh, so why does it have the 68?
Because you're running Bonjour Sleep proxy. That's what happens. Okay. Is it something's holding on to it? So it's probably not your Apple TV. The way to figure out, or the way I figure out what device is acting as a Bonjour Sleep proxy, is I wait for one of my Macs to go to sleep. And I know its IP address, right? So you either know it in advance or find it out in advance. And then let your Mac go to sleep, and it will hand off to whatever the device is that's the Bonjour Sleep proxy. Then go to a different Mac and choose to ping it. When you ping it, you will see replies coming from the proxy, and it will tell you the IP address that is acting as the proxy for those replies. And so then you can narrow down. And for me, it's my old time capsule. That's my Bonjour Sleep proxy. First gen time capsule where the drive has now died. And it's nothing more than a very over-glorified Ethernet switch at this point, because I've turned off the wireless because we determined, 5 years ago that was crap. But I left it on the network because it's got a hard drive in it. And why not? It's another backup destination. And then the hard drive died a couple of weeks ago, and the light turned from green to yellow. But it is still acting as my Bonjour Sleep proxy, for better and for worse. So, but as soon as I turn it off, then I assume that will hand off over to the Apple TV. I could be wrong. It might pick something else, but there you go. So, yeah, yep. That's what it is. All right. You know what? We got time for Joe. We're good. That one was quick. So Joe writes somewhere here. Oh, I know. I changed the order of things. Okay, there we are. Joe says, hi, guys. I tried turning off all calendars in the macOS calendar app. Then I turned them back on. Things loaded, But then the information box appeared, which said moving calendars to server account. The only way to stop this was to do a force quit. However, when I started up Calendar again, it continues to show that info box and won't let me do anything else. Very, very frustrating. I hope you guys have some ideas. By the way, when I create a calendar item on my iPhone, it does show up almost immediately in the calendar on iCloud on the web, just not on the calendar on my MacBook Pro. If I make an entry in Calendar on iCloud, it appears on my iPhone, but not my MacBook Pro. He says, one last thing. I have a file in Pages, which I update on both my Mac and my Mac, my iPhone and my MacBook Pro, and they sync fine. On the MacBook Pro, however, I run Pages on iCloud.com, so this might be identical to the situation when I enter a calendar item. I hope you're not confused. No, we're not. It sounds like you are storing all of your, at least your calendar data locally on your MacBook Pro, and therefore it's not syncing with iCloud. And when you see that moving calendars to server account box, what's happening there is it's migrating your local calendars to your iCloud so that things will then sync with your other devices. And you can have iCloud calendars and local calendars simultaneously on your devices if you choose. But as you're finding, that can get confusing because you put something on a calendar, you think it's on iCloud and it's not. So it sounds like your MacBook Pro might not even be syncing to iCloud at all. I'm curious if your iCloud Drive files are syncing or if your contacts are syncing. If they are, then calendars is your only problem. If they aren't, then iCloud is your problem. And if it's iCloud, I'd go into System Preferences iCloud and sign out completely, quit System Preferences, relaunch it, maybe even reboot your Mac, and then sign back in. And that should help to clear things up. If it's only your calendars, then you could try just unchecking the calendars box in your iCloud pref pane and quit and then come back in and recheck it. That would be my advice there. But unless you have a reason that you wouldn't want your a particular calendar synced with iCloud, and I totally get why you might have that reason, but if you don't have that, then I wouldn't store calendars locally. I would let everything sync with iCloud, and then sort of your life gets a little bit less confusing to manage. That's my thoughts. Anything from you guys? No, nothing, John? No. Okay. Well, that's where I'm going to bring in the band, because that's what we do here. Get a lot of
should, man, so they don't get hit by lightning and.
So the storm has passed through. As Pete mentioned, I know in pre-show and I think even during the show, it was a violent but very thin stretch.
Very thin line of storms.
Yeah, and they blew through here. It's sunny out again. There's a lot more leaves on the ground, and the ground is, of course, wet. We maintained power, or mostly maintained power, through the... It flickered a couple times, but the UPS is here, at least kept the computers alive. There is one switch between me here in the studio, between us in the studio and the router over in the house. There's one switch that is not on a UPS because it lives in my attic, and I don't want batteries in the attic during the summer months, or maybe even the winter months. I don't know. So that's why we lost you, John, because when the power flickered, that switch just reset. But otherwise things are fine here. Unfortunately, it sounds like at your house, you're on generator power.
Yeah, we're out.
You're out.
Power's out. So. Okay. Oh, generator will come on when I get home.
When you get home, right. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
We did that for 8 hours the other night. Car ran into a telephone pole near our home, and we were out 8 hours. Special fun.
That's special. That's great. God, that sucks. All right. I don't know. What do we have here? Feedback at MacGeekGab.com. If you want to send in your questions, your cool stuff found, your tips, we have a ton of tips to go through. We've got stuff from a few of the last previous shows, including a bunch of tips and follow-ups from our backup show. So we'll start next week with that, unless something earth-shattering happens between now and then that we just must discuss first. But I think
we may have had a storm-induced audio hiccup, Dave, because I believe you said feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
Oh, I did. I said feedback at MacGeekGab.com or premium at MacGeekGab.com if you are a premium member. Your support really means a lot to us and really, frankly, helps us out quite a bit. And you can find out all about that at MacGeekGab.com. One of the perks that you get is able to email us at premium@MacGeekGab.com. If you're going to support us directly, we prioritize the emails from you. And we do try to answer everything that comes in, no matter what method. But the stuff that comes into premium, we certainly try to address first. So thank you for your support. Really, it means a ton to us. 224-888-GEEK is a number anyone can call. And Pete, Geek is?
I think that's 4335.
That's right. You haven't been here, but you're way in sync. That's good. That's good. And visit us on Facebook. Our Facebook group is really, truly a wonderful resource. I find it a good resource for me as a user, as well as I'm happy to contribute and help everybody. But that's sort of the point, is we all help each other. Visit, go to MacGeekGab.com/Facebook, because that's easier to remember than Facebook.com/groups/MacGeekGab. But either way, we'll get you there and you can join the group, and we would love to have you. In fact, there was a topic that we brought up in the group about iCloud photo syncing that I want to actually have that discussion with you, John, because I think there's some interesting lessons to be learned or discussed, and it's an interesting thing to explore. So we'll explore that next week too. Just ran out of time here today. Anything you want to add, John?
Nope.
No. Okay. I want to thank the folks at CashFly, CacheFly.com, for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. And of course, I want to thank our sponsors, Eero at Eero.com. Coupon code MGG saves you all the money on your free overnight shipping, or all the money on overnight shipping so that it is free. There's a better way to say that. Got to check it out, Eero.com. And the folks in our podcast marketplace, of course, Gazelle. At gazelle.com, you can sell off your old iPhone while you're getting your new one. Fat Cat Software, makers of Power Photos and iPhoto Library Manager, at fatcatsoftware.com/MGG, where coupon code MGG saves you a bunch of money, actually. Smile at smilesoftware.com/geek. Barebones Software at barebones.com. And, of course, our friends at Otherworld Computing at macsales.com. Any thoughts on three words, Pete, that might help?
I've only got three words to say. Don't get caught.